This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ryan Fowler from the Draft Network is going to jump on with us in about 25 minutes. He says and reported that Washington's going to meet with a certain running back in Indianapolis, like the best one in the draft. We'll talk draft with Ryan Fowler at 12:30. I had Ted Leonsis on my podcast. It was a lengthy conversation. He was great. He was very generous with his time. And I'm going to play a couple of chunks of it on the show, one today, one tomorrow. But you can hear the whole thing in its entirety at thekevinsheehanshow.com or wherever you get my podcast. Talked about a lot of things. Caps, Ovi's Chase, you know, how he felt about the reaction to the announcement, you know, months ago about Potomac Yards and how he dealt with that. But the chunk that I'm going to play for you right now deals with what the Wizards are doing. You know, they finally decided to do it in a way in which it kind of tears the whole thing down, accumulates draft choices, and tries to hit it big in the draft for a couple of years. And hopefully they land on a transformational player. Of course, it means a lot of losing in the interim. So this is the part that I wanted to play for you. It started this way. Now, you've entered into a process, which, by the way, I'm in favor of, that we all hope eventually produces something big. But there's pain in getting there, and I'm wondering, because you're a basketball guy. I don't know that everybody understands that. You know, growing up where you grew up in New York, basketball was a love for you. How are you dealing with this right now? Is it hard for you to watch this team that doesn't win really at all, but understand that it's part of a bigger picture? How are you dealing with the night in and night out right now of an 82-game season where your team doesn't have a chance?
I am very, very excited because, you know, I participated actively in the rebuild with risk with the Capitals, you'd almost say twice, and I've seen very positive outcomes on it. Our WNBA team, you know, Mike Thibault retired. He was the winningest coach in the WNBA. Our team made the playoffs, I think, 12 of 13 years. We went to the finals, and then we won a championship. Our esports teams are the best in the world. Our building, right, what we just did with the inauguration, we were called the world's most important arena. Never before had a president, vice president, all the cabinet members, leaders of the Senate and Congress, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, it didn't matter. They were all here. This is a really, really important city, and we have built really world-class franchises. We just haven't gotten it right in the NBA. It's difficult. You know, when I bought the team, we were not very good. We traded all of our players, and we won the first-round pick in the draft, and we got John Wall. And then we drafted Bradley Beal and Otto Porter. We had three max players, all young players. The team was going through the playoffs. I think we had 49 wins. We lost to Boston in a game seven.
Yep.
We were turning it around. We had room to sign good free agents.
Wait.
And then, frankly, injuries really hurt. Otto Porter, his hip. But we had to pay Otto the max because he signed a term sheet to go to Brooklyn. John Wall just had a history of injuries, and he wasn't the same player that we drafted with that great upside. The reason he got a Supermax deal from us was he qualified
right.
to be a Supermax by being, you know, All-NBA and X-time All-Star and the like. Brad Beal, who was a top three pick in the draft, and there isn't one player that we missed on those three, you know, when you went through the draft. Like, John Wall was clearly the number one pick in that draft. Evan Turner went
right.
second.
Well, we don't have to talk about the 2011 draft.
Yeah, okay. You know, Jan Vesely is not someone that, you know, they whiffed on. We
right.
whiffed on. But we went young, and we had upside, and injuries derailed us. And we still had a very high payroll, and we made some trades, and we just never put it together. And, you know, even the last year before we said, I need to move on and not be stuck in the middle and not perform to middle standards, right? We had Porzingis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Porzingis gets traded to Boston. He wins a championship the next year,
right?
He's a very unique player. And so what I decided to do was you can't take half steps. And so we totally rebuilt our front office. They totally rebuilt the coaching staff. And they put in a philosophy, and their Sam Presti, they're part of the Sam Presti
yes,
tree.
We know that. Yep.
They're very creative. They're very young. They're very innovative. They're not shy about trading. And, you know, I can't even count anymore.
I know.
We have.
Well, yeah, I think it's something like 16 second rounders or something like that.
Yep.
But so how, though, are you dealing with this on a night in and night out basis?
I had the greatest time last night. It was awesome.
Because they won.
Brooklyn.
Because they won?
Well, I had a great time at the Milwaukee game the other
okay.
night, right? And
all right.
We played great, and we lost because we're young and we didn't have a closer. Last night, Marcus Smart played,
mm-hmm.
and the young guys were playing well, but
right.
Marcus drew a charge against a young player in Brooklyn, and then we came down, hit a three, and then we had a steal defense, and we scored, foul shot, we win the game. Marcus was running off the court. I said, this is going to love this. I said, welcome to D.C., thank you. And the game turned on you drawing the charge. And he looked right at me and he said, yes, it did.
You know, look, he's the grandfather on the team at this point at 31 years old or whatever he is. All right, so is
there... And next year's draft...
I was going to ask you about that.
Year after draft...
I know.
Next year's draft and the year after's draft are very, very strong.
Ted.
So if you were not going to be competitive...
Right. These are the years. This upcoming draft in June of 25, Ted, will have a player at the top of it that many believe could be a transformative franchise changer. That player is Duke's Cooper Flagg. You're a basketball fan. How much of Cooper Flagg have you watched? Have you been paying attention to?
He's a really, really good prospect, and there's a lot of... That's what's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
There's four or five players that could be difference makers, but they're prospects, right? So you know, we have people that, you know, Troy Weaver is, we have great, great staff now. Michael and Will have built an unbelievable staff. You know, Travis is a great, great talent evaluator. Troy Weaver is a great, great talent evaluator. Detroit's doing pretty good right now. They mostly young kids,
true
players that
yes.
Detroit brought in there, right?
Yeah.
So they're really, really excited about the depth here.
Okay.
And I think that there's 3, 4, maybe 5 players that can, you know, be in your rotation. But the NBA, you know, Victor Wembanyama is a, you know, I've never seen a player like him.
I agree. Mean,
he played the other night.
It was like
I watched. It was unbelievable, right?
Yeah, honestly, the definition of an athlete unicorn. And hopefully he gets healthy, because that seems a bit scary, the situation he has. No, look.
But the days of, like, in the NFL,
yeah,
you get a unicorn quarterback and the team improves and goes deep into the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's not happening anymore. Victor couldn't do that with San Antonio.
No.
Last year or this year, right? I mean, and you play a lot of minutes in the NBA, but you know, a quarterback in the NFL can turn the franchise around quickly. Alex Ovechkin, Sidney Crosby, their first couple years, they didn't make the team championship caliber. Right, you play 20, 25 minutes in the NHL. LeBron was playing 40 minutes in the NBA. It took many years to make it great. And so you know, it's different sport by sport. But if you get enough, you know, the philosophy that Michael and the staff have is you got to get at bat. You know,
Understood.
We had 3 first-round picks last year.
Yeah, understood.
I think all 3 kids are going to be in the league, right?
I think
all 3 kids are going
to
play.
But you need to win a title, the last NBA team to win a title without a clear-cut top 5 superstar on the roster. The 2004 Pistons, that's how far back you have to go. So the swings, I think we all understand, you got to keep taking swings, and the more swings you get, the better chance you'll land on that transcendent, transformational, franchise-changing, you know, player, like Washington did with Jaden Daniels in football. So I think everybody's, I am at least, I'm all for this process, because this is the one.
Yeah. And what was our choice? Right, because you can manage to the cap, but bring in 1 free agent.
Yeah.
And in the new NBA, you need depth. You need 7, 8, 9 players. You look at, our pace of play is what I'm watching for and is exciting. Our ability to play positionless basketball, which is all the rage. And we have a guard who's 6'8", right? And you need long bodies. You need players who can hit threes. You need players who can score in transition. The hardest thing in the NBA is to get players to play good team defense. That was the thing I was watching with Marcus Smart last night. The guy didn't shut up on defense. Yak. It was like, you got to talk on defense. ISO. I got him low, right? Go through the pick. I'm going to the 3. I mean, he was like a defensive coach on there. And you could tell he was enjoying mentoring the young kids. One player was having a tough game. And the 2 vets, Chris Middleton, kept going up to him and say, shake it off. Keep your head up. Don't talk to the ref. You haven't earned the ref's respect to listen to you. Don't save your energy, right? I mean,
yeah.
It was like a clinic watching those guys. Well, the experience that the young kids are getting in this rebuild is really going to fortify
them awesome.
As they grow up.
Yeah. Is there, of the truly young players, you know, whether it's Bilal or any of the 3 first-rounders from this year, you know, Alex, Kaishan, or Bub, are any of them, do you think, you know, have you landed? I'll just tell you,
I think all 4 of those are going to be rotation players.
Yes.
They're NBA
okay.
players. That's really good. I think Sarr is a sleeper in that – He's so big. He's so long. He can run for days. He can rebound. You know, he's working on his three-point shot. He was the second pick in the draft. Defensively, he has natural gifts. I think he could be a really good player. But if you add another really good player with him, he becomes a better player, right? I think Bilal has things in his repertoire that he pulls out, and you go, wow, where did that come from? He's shooting threes. He played really, really well yesterday shooting threes. He got big steals. He gets rebounds. He can jump through the building. He's got really big hands, really long. That's what you want, right? That's what I mean. Oklahoma City right now has probably the best team in the NBA. They've got 9 or 10 high draft picks that are all playing positionless basketball, and one guy who's MVP quality. But he couldn't do it alone, right? He's in a rotation, and that's what you've got to do. And the only way you can build a team like that is to have a lot of first-round picks and a lot of draft capital.
How much NBA do you watch?
I watch a lot of NBA. I watch a lot of NHL. The thing that's different about the NBA and the NHL is thus. The best teams playing the best basketball that go into the playoffs
win.
Usually are the teams that are the best teams and win the championship.
That's right.
The NHL, it's really...
random.
It's different, right? I mean, you have... I remember a couple of years ago, you know, Philadelphia makes the playoffs the last game of the season by winning in overtime, and they're in the finals, right? L.A., the Kings, they're out of it New Year's Day. They... rally, they make the playoffs the last game of the season, and they win the Stanley Cup by winning 4 7-game series.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
Look,
right?
you used to say, you said for many years, and I talked about this, you said, we're going to work to put together a team that wins enough games to be a part of the playoffs every year. Yep. But in that sport, that's what you have to do, because anybody can win it once you get there. And you guys had a lot of bad luck with some really good teams. You had some bad puck luck along the way. So thank God what happened in 2018 happened again, and maybe it's in the cards. But you're 100% right. The NBA in a best of seven, the best team pretty much wins.
You want us to win the President's Trophy this season?
Why? Because if I said yes, will it jinx it?
Well, I mean, someone asked me that the other day. I said, oh, so what do you want us to do?
Well, right.
Go into the locker room and say, we want you to lose so that we don't have the best record.
Right.
Right? I mean, any competitive.
Right.
But I believe in the curse. I will say, you get a President's Trophy, and I would get mine, and I would hide it in the closet, and I never mentioned it. And then we won the Stanley Cup in a year that we didn't have our best team. We had some President's Trophy winning teams that were awesome, right? And if they had won Stanley Cup that year, you'd say, oh, they were one of the best teams in
2010.
Yep, there you go. But after we won the Stanley Cup, I brought the President's Trophies out and I displayed them proudly, because it says we won a Stanley Cup, we had the second most playoff appearances in 25 years, and in 3 of those years we had the best record during the regular season.
Right.
That's all a part of your body of work as owners. But unless you win the cup, and that's what's so clarifying, the Mystics, they won a ring. The Nationals, they won the World Series. The Commanders, they've won Super Bowls, right? You've got to win the ring. You've got to win the championship. And then the body of work goes in the context.
Thank God you got yours in 2018, because those President's Trophies, which actually are reflective of real accomplishment, we'd be mocking you over that.
It's unfair, but it comes with the territory, right? It's like, okay, tell me in anything for you in high school, were you best in the class three times? No.
Right.
You didn't have the best grades. You didn't have the most points, whatever. But I get it.
Yeah.
But now it's like, well, let's win another cup.
Sure.
Right?
Back to Cooper Flagg for a moment.
Yep.
Have you penciled out, you're a data person, you're a projection person, have you penciled out what Cooper Flagg might mean for the Wizards just in incremental revenue?
No.
You haven't?
I haven't done that, no.
Don't you think that the first American
he might not even declare for the draft. And remember, because trust the process,
mm-hmm.
change the way the lottery system works.
I know.
Okay?
14%.
And we could finish with the worst record and pick fifth.
Yep. I get that.
Okay?
Let's hope that doesn't happen. Because I honestly think
the odds say
I hear you. Yeah, it's only a 14% chance. I get that. I just think that
who do we thank for that, by the way? Who should we say thank you, Josh Harris?
Josh Harris, yeah, exactly.
No, Josh is my buddy.
I know, but that's why it changed.
Right? And look at them now, right? I mean, what they've lost eight in a row.
God,
it's so sad watching it.
It's a disaster. But this is the kind of player, though, that when I've, sort of dreamt about, the Wizards land on that transcendent player, and it comes at number one. They might be cut. It might come at number five. Who knows? We look at Giannis. We look at Kawhi. We've seen Jokic, the best player in the NBA, arguably went in the second round. But Cooper Flagg, forget the talent, which is unmistakable. And I'm not putting him in the Wembanyama class because he's not. You're right about young players. It's an old players' league. He's going to win titles, though. It certainly looks like they're going to be a major contender. But I think about what Cooper Flagg would do for your franchise. The first American-born white player to be drafted number one overall since Kent Benson, a Dookie for starters. That makes it even a little bit more sort of brings a cachet to it. The best player in America right now. He's going to win National Player of the Year. I think the atmosphere, even though I would understand and basketball people would understand, it's going to take some time, but that would be an exciting get. Don't you think that would be much different than any of the other opportunities you've had over the years drafting really high?
Yeah, it's really inappropriate for an owner of a team that doesn't have a good record to talk about who in the draft. You don't know when you're picking, and there's so much still to happen for the rest of the year. And we also have a WNBA draft, right? We made news yesterday. We traded.
Yeah. Okay, but it might be inappropriate. So, but you're a basketball person, and this is the
you're not going to get me there for a headline.
I'm not trying to get you there for a headline. I want to know if you're watching Cooper
Flagg.
You're
on the show again.
I want to know if you're watching and dreaming about somebody like Cooper Flagg. Maybe it's Ace Bailey or Dylan Harper.
I didn't go to the game in Maryland.
Which game?
When Duke plays Maryland, I didn't go to the game. Duke, we had lots of scouts there, right?
Duke didn't play Maryland. Duke doesn't play Maryland.
No.
Yeah.
Duke will play Maryland.
No, we're not in the ACC
Rutgers
anymore.
Plays, right?
We've been in the Big Ten for 11 years now. We haven't
11 years.
Yeah.
I saw that Bernhardt did Muir, by the way, just stepped down in Stanford. After winning 30 championships across all sports, he was Georgetown's athletic director, right? And he moved the team from West, and it's a big part of the issues that we're all facing with NIL and in college sports, right? You don't know who's playing in what.
No, it's true. It's true.
Groups, right?
Well, look, you're a Georgetown guy, and you didn't even know that Maryland was in the Big Ten.
What game? what game did I watch the other night?
You watched
Illinois.
Duke play. Yeah, they played Illinois in the Garden. Yeah.
I watched that game.
Yeah, they looked pretty good.
What was that? Yeah.
That was not
the whole Duke team looked pretty good.
That was an out-of-conference kind of late-season made-for-TV matchup. All right, let's move on. And you can hear Ted for an hour plus on my podcast, thekevinsheehanshow.com, or anywhere else you get a podcast. I'll play some of it tomorrow as well. We'll play his reaction, the fan reaction to the announcement that they were going to move to Potomac Yards, and also what he thought of the skin season that just happened. So you'll hear some of that tomorrow. When we come back, Ryan Fowler from the Draft Network. Washington is interviewing the top running back in the draft. We'll find out about that and a lot more next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. Download the free and Odyssey app. Indy Combine ongoing. Ryan Fowler is there. He has done a great job covering the draft over the last several years for the Draft Network. You can follow Ryan on X on Twitter, @_RyanFowler_. He joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. So before we get to what's next in the NFL, it's been a while since I've had you on. What did you make of Washington's season, in particular Jaden Daniels' season?
Yeah, first things first, Kevin. You know, it has been a little while. You know, I hope all is well with you, man. It's always good talking ball
too,
with you.
Right.
Jaden was sensational this year, right? It's been, you know, three decades coming, except for, of course, the 1 year in 2012. But it's really exciting for what this franchise can be moving forward. You know, you're starting to lay this foundation, not with just Jaden, but with Mike Sanders still, guys like Johnny Newton that are now going to have a larger opportunity, of course, with John Allen probably likely out. And I'm very excited, you know, personally to see what Adam Peters, what Dan Quinn, what they're going to do with the rest of this roster, because it's a good time to, you know, be following the burgundy and gold, and the only way up is right now. So it's an exciting time for sure, Kevin.
Ryan does a lot of work covering the Commanders as well, hosts of Commanding the Huddle. So what do you think should be the approach here in the offseason?
Yeah, I think first things first. You know, I think what's great about this whole process, you know, we're here at the Combine right now, but free agency here is in, you know, just a little bit of time. And really whatever Adam Peters and his staff wants to do in that window is going to really paint the picture as far as what they want to do in the draft. Now, if you were to ask me right now what the major roster holes for this organization are, I am still scared at perimeter corner. You know, Mike Sanders still is the best corner on the roster right now for me. I can't sit here and say Marshawn Lattimore is the all-pro that we've seen in New Orleans. He just was abysmal the back end of the year. Edge, they absolutely have to add a guy or two. Do they want to add another flex weaponite head end? I'm not sure. Do they add a tackle? I think running back, absolutely, whether you want one or not, considering the four guys that you've had in this year. So there's just a lot of players, really, in this draft where you're going to find guys day one, day two, day three. Even though, Kevin, it's a top-heavy draft, there's four or five blue chippers. But when you get into that day two, day three bucket and you trust your football staff, you're going to find a lot of contributors on all 3 days.
Are you philosophically in the camp that I'm in, which is we're actually, for the first time in three-plus decades, we've got a championship window? It won't be the last one with Jaden, but it's the first one because of his rookie deal, and that they should be thinking big, and they should be thinking about a roster that can go win the Super Bowl in 2025 and in 2026.
Yeah, it's crazy to say, right? You know, 1 year, it's amazing how things can change so quickly. But, you know, I've even talked to some Eagles folks and said, hey, you know, I'm glad you guys won it this year, because Jaden Daniels and the Commanders, that roster was in year one of this thing. You know, you had a bunch of one-year flyers on some guys at a lot of different spots. And, you know, what this team's going to look like even moving into the next 2-3 years is very different from the success we saw in 2024. But the bottom line is you got your guy under center. And I fully expect Jaden Daniels, as he's looked this year, to be an MVP candidate moving into hopefully the next decade or more in Washington. So I just think the biggest thing, Kevin, right now is where they've approached this thing from free agency, adding guys, you know, filling holes, but also looking at the draft to where I'm excited even moving into this year for guys like Dom Hampton and for guys like Jordan McGee that have really been forgot about a little bit in that last draft class, to where I think they're going to get a bigger opportunity here in 2025 as far as versatile second and third level defenders, guys that really fit the modern day defensive scheme and exactly what Joe Witt wants to do.
You agree that defense should be the emphasis before anything else?
I do. You know, there's a lot of attention every single year as far as, you know, offense, as far as receivers, quarterbacks, running backs, putting the most points up. But as the Eagles proved again against Mahomes, you got to win the trenches and on the offensive line, defensive line. And in this class, where I could sit here, Kevin, we could talk for hours about how many darn players there are that are going to be contributors along the defensive line. Edge is a big focus for me. And if you're at 29 right now, I don't think a Jahad Campbell is there at 29. You know, a lot of his work primarily in the offseason has been at edge. We know that Joe Witt wants to utilize a guy like that, even like a Frankie Louvu type of role where you can play off ball or you can play with your hand in the dirt a little bit. But defense, absolutely, was specifically within the front seven. You got to get more pop. You got to get younger at some certain positions. And you got to have guys, bottom line, that can win isolated. You know, a lot of the time for Washington this year, Kevin, it was a lot of twists, a lot of stunts, a lot of games up front to try to create these isolated matchups. I need guys that can win one-on-one. And there's a lot of guys in this class that can do that on all 3 days.
Before we get to the draft class and everything that's going on out in Indy, are you in favor of making a run at Myles Garrett if he were available?
I am. You know, immediately you look at Myles away from just, you know, what he's done. He would immediately, for me, become the most talented player, one of the most talented defensive players ever to wear the Burgundy Gold, right, along with the Sean Taylors of the world and guys of yesteryear. So I'm absolutely in support of that. You know, you mentioned earlier as far as the Super Bowl window. I think they're in that window. You add a guy like that, that opens up opportunities for other guys elsewhere. So I'm fully in support of that, absolutely.
Real quickly, back to the draft and looking at edges. At 29, you know, you mentioned a player. First of all, I'm curious if a guy like Mike Green, from Marshall, do you think he would be available at 29 or not?
As the weeks progress, Kevin, I don't think he's going to be there at 29. Okay. But I will say this. There's one thing about Mike. You know, the pass rush repertoire is great to see, but he's a very, very underrated run defender. And
exactly.
Even just working my way around Indy this week, it pops on tape. And that's a guy you can throw in an early down. So I don't think he's going to be there at 29.
Okay, because I mean, you want obviously a disruptive, you know, havoc wreaking pass rusher, but they have to have somebody next year that can set the edge against the run. I mean, that's where they were hurt, I think, more than anywhere else. I mean, they got run on all year, right, Ryan? And a lot of that was by elite level running backs. You know, when you go back, I don't think anybody faced the slew of elite backs that Washington faced, but it was C gap and outside of that they were really struggling. So, in looking at Green, I thought that's a guy, if he slipped there, they have a chance to maybe kill two birds with one stone. All right. Give us a list, if you don't mind, if you have it, of the players that they've met with or are planning on meeting with in Indy.
Yeah, absolutely. I could pull up a couple guys that I have. You know, there's still more to come, of course.
I saw the Genty tweet.
Yes, Genty. I met with Genty, and I also put out Billy Bowman Jr., the safety from Oklahoma. I believe they have one coming up with Joshua Farmer, interior defensive lineman from Florida State. As well. And they also met this week with C.J. Dupree, tight end from Alabama, formerly of Maryland.
Oh, yeah. I remember Dupree at Maryland. Yep. So Genty's not going to be there at 29. We agree on that, right?
100%, he will not be there. No.
Okay, so they're looking at back. I mean, Washington would never trade up for a back. You don't think they'd do that, do you?
No, and I will say this too, Kevin. I like Genty, but I have Amarian Hampton right there with him. And in this class, where there's a lot of guys on day two and even day three, that I would say I could wait, considering that the Commanders don't have a ton of draft capital, you know. And I think you can wait and don't. You definitely don't have to move up for a guy, because I don't see, for me, Kevin, that Genty is not in that Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs category for me.
I don't think any of them are in this draft. Do you think Hampton is?
No, I do not. I do not. I think both those guys are first-round talents. I project them as RB1s for sure at the next level. But, you know, Bijan and Jahmyr were superstar, dynamic type of playmakers that you can build all even your offense around. I'm not saying that Genty or Hampton can't be that, but they're just in a different tier for me.
Don't you think that's interesting, Ryan, where we were just a few years ago on running backs? And then when, you know, you see a season with a Saquon Barkley, a Derrick Henry, a Bijan Robinson, who was sensational. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out why Detroit didn't give Montgomery's carries to Gibbs in the playoff game. I think they would have been better off had they done that. We've seen a resurrection of the position, and I'm wondering if you think that'll be, you know, lifted, you know, emphasized more in the upcoming draft.
Yeah, it will. And I think when you look at even just the tendencies, right, of the modern day defenses, where of course everyone wants to live in too high and stop you throwing the ball. Well, if we got a guy, you know, that we can have five at the surface area along the line of scrimmage and we can beat you and even just keep our tight end in, force you to bring a safety up, and then we're going to beat you over the top. But also in this class, Kevin, you know, some of these bigger ball carriers on day two, the Cam Scattaboos, Damian Martinez from Miami, Ollie Gordon from Oklahoma State, I do too. You know, he's just a physical type of player. And I think those guys, there's not a lot of them in this class. There's a lot of these 5'10 to 5'11 smaller, shiftier ball carriers like Jordan James, Woody Marks, R.J. Harvey, and these bigger ball carriers, these projectable RB1s, are going to boost up some boards because of their physical nature, which is going to be interesting to really see on day two just how fast these guys start flying off the board.
I loved Martinez at Oregon State even before last year. I thought it was great there. I think we talked about Scattaboo yesterday, I think, on the show. I mean, he is one tough SOB. There's no doubt about that. And he's got some, you know, versatility as a pass catcher, but I don't think he's got great vision as a runner. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I want to see more of it. You know, there's even for me, he reminds me a little bit of a guy last year that came out of Missouri. Now, Scattaboo is a better player than this kid, but Cody Schrader, that was at the senior bowl, reminds me of him as far as a guy that was a really good story. You know, Cam going from Sac State down to Arizona State and doing what he did. He's going to have a role, whether that's as an RB1 for a team. I personally just don't see that. I do expect him to get some looks as a fullback and do some different things for an offense. But as far as just saying, hey, we're going to hand it to you 20-plus times a game, and we need you to, you know, create on first and 10 and also be a guy on third and five and space or to pick up a linebacker through the A-gaps, there's just some different things in his game I want to see him fine-tune. But, you know, Cam's a good player. We're in the 60s and 70s. He's a guy you draft as the first overall. But it's a different day and age, and I think just some teams are going to prioritize more of those dynamic type of ball carriers, like even a Burchard Smith from SMU, potentially over a guy like Cam.
NFL Draft Network's Ryan Fowler, who's a big guy on Washington as well. So they have two wide receivers currently under contract. That's it. Terry, who we think they'll extend, and then Luke McCaffrey. So what are they going to do? I mean, I think they're going to re-sign Zaccheaus. I think that's coming soon. That's just a hunch. It's not based on any information. But how do you see... And what's your vision of what the wide receiver room looks like next year?
Yeah, I sure as heck hope that Luke McCaffrey takes a step. You know, this guy was a top 100 pick. You know, I get it. You know, it was a guy that was fell behind the scenes a little bit this year, and Jaden fed a lot of guys. But, you know, you're adding Peters working into year two, where, as you mentioned, Kevin, it's only him and Terry. You know, I don't think in any world Adam Peters or Dan Quinn are going to say, feel comfortable that we want Luke McCaffrey as our wide receiver two in our offense. So, does that come via free agency? You know, we'll see. They obviously have a lot of stuff, a lot of capital to be able to add a guy if they want. But in this draft class, you know, there's a lot of guys, and again, in that day two, day three bucket, I feel like I keep mentioning because, you know, whether it's a Tez Johnson from Oregon, now the size, I will say this, that's a common knack on Tez, but I think he's a flat-out ball player that does remind me of Tank Dell. Or do you want to go more of the bigger physical type of players like a Jaden Higgins from Iowa State or even a Pat Bryant from Illinois? So there's a lot of guys in this class I feel like they're going to be able to add. And I think the bottom line is when you have a guy under center that can elevate every single individual and skill set around him, no matter who you are, Olamide Zaccheaus, Noah Brown, doesn't matter, Kevin. It makes life a little bit easier as far as we don't have to get flat-out studs like a Malik Nabers on the outside to make life easier on our quarterback.
Any chance that Luther Burden drops to 29?
Oh, there's absolutely a chance. I'll say this, you know, even some conversations this week, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see both Luther Burden and Tator McMillan be available when we get to the early 20s. I wouldn't be surprised at all. So Luther is a guy, you know, there's been some Debo Samuel comparisons. I don't understand why we always have to give comparisons to guys of the elites of their position as far as dynamic, versatile skill sets. I don't see Debo in Luther Burden's game. I get the yak stuff. It's sometimes similar. But
I don't see the physicality that Debo has. I mean, Debo's at a different level competitively and physically. But Burden's ability after the catch is incredible.
Yes. Correct. And that's also, and even in Washington's offense, where you want to get guys in space and advantageous matchups, and Jaden has obviously done a great job getting the ball out of his hands, that's a guy that would obviously succeed. However, if he's not there at 29, and you want a guy maybe that has a similar-ish skill set, I look to day three, probably in that fourth, fifth-round bucket of a guy like LaJonte Wester from Colorado. You know, all the attention, Kevin, this year was Shedeur Sanders, Travis Hunter, Deion Sanders, and LaJonte coming in from FAU, watching him at the Shrine Bowl, watching him at Colorado, to where the separation will always translate. That's a player to keep an eye on as a dynamic type of playmaker, if indeed, Kevin, you know, Olamide doesn't come back this year.
Just out of curiosity, where is Ty Felton from Maryland projected to go?
I would be very surprised he gets out of the second round right now. He's continued to check boxes, whether it was at Maryland, whether it was at the Senior Bowl. Heard a lot of good things as far as what he's going to do here in Indy. I know T-shirt and shorts isn't everything for these guys as far as teams bumping and moving guys up their boards. But I'd be very surprised if Ty Felton got out of day two, because I think he's one of those guys, Kevin, that's a little bit underrated, as is Caden Prather as well for Maryland.
I agree with Prather as well, but Felton really was something else this year. But by the way, just mentioning that you don't see McMillan and Burden going, or the receiver run starting until the 20s. I mean, we're in a different, you know, a different draft than recent drafts. So you really think McMillan doesn't go before somewhere around, because I'm assuming you don't have a receiver in front of him unless you have Igbuka in front of him.
I do not. No, okay. I have McMillan, Burden, Matthew Golden, and Igbuka really in a tight tier one in this class for me.
Okay. All right. As a Washington, you know, follower, if I told you they got a running back that you really liked in the draft, or they got a wide receiver that you really got liked in the draft, but they didn't get both, which of the two positions would you prefer for Washington?
I'd prefer running back. You need a guy that can take the load off of Jaden Daniels a little bit. You know, there was so much asked of him with his arm and with his legs, to where how many games did we see specifically at the back end of the year and even in the playoffs, to where it was Jaden leading, of course, through the air and then also with his legs. And you just got to get a guy you can turn to potentially 15, 17, 18 times a game and say, hey, we need you to create on early downs and on passing downs as well. So I think there's just so many guys in this class, differentiating body types, different skill sets. So I would prioritize running back. Where is that? Where they take them? Day one, day two, day three? I don't know. We will see. But there are so many guys in this class that are going to be high-level contributors, and they need one. They need a playmaker at the position that, unfortunately, you know, Brian Robinson, I like the talent, but just there's a lot of things in his game that are just have not improved since he came in to Washington from Bama.
You know, Ryan, I think two things that I have not been able to figure out, even as we sit here, you know, heading into March, about the season just finished up. I still can't tell you specifically why they were so bad against the run. I don't think anybody's got an obvious answer, because they do have some good players on defense. Wagner's really good. Luvu's really good. I thought Chin had a good season. And then the second part is, with a dynamic dual threat quarterback, and they were, you know, in an offense where he was presented as a run threat a lot of the time, you know, as true dual threat, I can't believe the backs didn't feast more. Even it doesn't, like, Alfred Morris, you know, had the all-time rushing season for Washington with a dual-threat quarterback. I can't figure out why a lot of the zone read stuff didn't produce more for the running backs.
Yeah, I will say this. You know, looking at the body types within this offensive line, you know, even looking at Kingsbury's days, right, back in Arizona, to where Allegretti, Biotish, Cosme. I mean, Cosme is a high-level athlete himself. But these guys are very thick in the upper half, kind of want to live on that vertical plane. Brandon Coleman's a rookie. Andrew Wiley is kind of this, you know, average to probably slightly below average NFL right tackle. He's not your atypical right tackle where he gets after people and moves guys in the ground game. You know, they're from a skill set perspective, I thought they were better in pass pro than in the ground game, where at times, you know, in the ground game, they really look like strategically placed road cones. At times, you know, they're not getting off guys in duo and working up to the second level. They're not doing anything like that at times. So I think I like the offensive line group moving into next year. I do. But just looking at the skill sets that were added last year, and even some of the things that Jaden did to mask this group up front, both on the ground and through the air, you know, I think it's another spot to maybe they bring in a guy in this class, maybe another athlete along the interior to provide some pop and some competition for some of these guys.
Interesting. Or they could move Coleman inside and take a tackle, I guess. Ryan, thanks. Great job. Appreciate it. I'll reach out again before the draft. I really appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Thanks as always, Kevin. We'll talk soon, man.
Ryan Fowler, everybody. Finish up with a note that just broke in 2 minutes. So are you still okay with the RFK site if it means no more tailgating? Eric Flack, WUSA-TV9, reported that much of the parking at a stadium site at RFK would be garage parking, not surface parking. They just don't have the acreage for it. That could eliminate tailgating. But the stadium's not going to open until 2030, 2031. Still, tailgate in the garages. Chris Russell next.